welcome one and all once again to Dual Wielding for the week of May 11th, 2015. Joining me this week, we have Daniel.
Hello.
And we have Martin.
Hi.
So it was a fun-filled 2 weeks, and I was informed that we were a bit negative with our last show, so we're going to be super-duper positive this week.
Negative? About what?
I'm never negative. I don't know what anybody's talking about.
My problem is more I can't recall what I wasn't negative about.
I think part of it, and we can kind of continue this conversation and get it out of the way, is the whole drama between Konami, PT, and Silent Hills. I think when we last spoke, Silent Hill was officially canceled, and since then, the PT demo has been delisted from the PlayStation Store, and if I'm not mistaken, it seems that even if you have it, you can't re-download the game, or was that a error?
And that's correct, and to make things even worse, if you have it installed, it expires now.
No, it doesn't. That was a different thing.
I thought it did. There was a thing.
Yeah, that was a different thing. That was a user from Germany because the game is 18 rated, and therefore you needed to have PlayStation Plus, and that is just the date his PlayStation Plus expires.
Yeah. So, and if
so it's not that bad then.
And if you played and stream it, apparently Konami will come to your house and kill everybody you love because they want no recognition of this. Not the same thing. But this kind of reminds me of a few years ago when Sega wanted to clean up Sonic image, so they were getting rid of all the bad Sonic games off the store shelves so that they could pretend they didn't exist. And of course, they decided to fix that image by making more bad Sonic games.
Sega did the same, the similar thing with Shining Force as well, if I remember correctly.
And this isn't in our news, but they're also doing it on their mobile game front they announced this week. Is that they're going to start listing mobile games that don't meet their quality control. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, this is like the third time you're doing it. At some point, maybe you should work on actually making good games.
Nah.
It's just easier to release them and then pretend that they no longer exist.
Exactly. And maybe get some suckers to buy them.
I don't know, maybe you two are more positive about this than I am, which I doubt, but just to kind of get all the bad news up front, we didn't talk about the Batman Arkham Knight Season Pass last time we were here. That came out, and... Okay, first off, it's $40, which is pretty much the price of the game I'm going to buy anyhow, so it's ridiculous that I'd have to pay the same price for a Season Pass as you do for the physical game.
I can't fathom the idea of buying a $40 season pass. I just can't. Not with... No fiber in my body will allow that for me to do it. Because you just don't know what you're gonna get. Even when they vaguely write up some sentences, they have this press release. Well, maybe find it. It doesn't really give you any idea if this will be worth $40. And let's be honest, it probably won't.
My favorite thing from the season pass is one of the gets is you get Batmobile skins and then special challenge maps to drive those Batmobiles on. And I'm just saying, this looks like the worst part of the game, and you're trying to encourage me by releasing that.
That skins are part of a season pack alone is, like, the worst. I think skins are absolutely worthless in my opinion.
That is one of their talking points. The things they talk about that they detail was Batgirl Matter of Family, which is a prequel that features Barbara Gordon. I think that's been confirmed now. There's more downloadable missions, which they don't go into. There's a prequel and epilogue. It really sounds like, okay, we're just going to chunk up this game's story and give it to you piecemeal. And
well, on the other hand, you don't even know if this prequel stuff will be worth a shit. Because
yeah.
it might just be a thing you can play through in an hour. You don't
yeah.
know. And then it might not even be good.
Yeah, and there's no real time frame. It's just like you'll get this stuff over with the next 6 months.
I don't... You know what I think about this is... I just think that after Arkham Origins, I just think that anybody that gives WB money for this kind of thing just deserves what they're going to get, because they're not going to get what they think they're going to get.
Yeah,
you know,
and
they just kind of deserve it. I hate to say it, but if you're that dumb, then...
Yep, so far, I think WB has, like, they have, like, pretty disgusting business strategies when it comes to their games, and...
They get away with it because they're not EA.
And the stuff they release for it, I don't think anything has been great so far. I still remember, like, the hubbub about, like, yeah, when you pre-order, you get to play as Catwoman. That was Arkham City, right?
Yeah.
I remember playing that. That was kind of shitty.
Yeah, it was, like, it was, like, three short segments that maybe were half an hour combined or something like that. And it was really strange. And it's really weird, because I pre-ordered the game. I mean, I'm going to complain and bitch about it, but I'm going to buy Arkham Knight because it's a really good game.
Oh, I will probably buy Arkham Knight. I'm just saying I will not buy that season pass.
Yeah, and I was going to say, the other thing, especially with Warner and this franchise, they have done a Game of the Year edition for every single one of these.
Oh, yeah.
So just wait for that, which will probably be out in November because nobody waits until the new year anymore.
And it's even worse on PC because I paid about £2 for Arkham Asylum and about £2 for Arkham City Game of the Year and about £4 for Arkham Origins and all the DLC for it. So what's the point, you know? Just wait and you'll get it for dirt cheap, especially if you plan on playing this game on PC.
Yeah. And I will also say, as somebody who loves Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, and Arkham Origin, I have not bought DLC for any of these games, and I've had a great time. None of them have been vital. None of them seem like they're stuff that you really need, and this just seems like a waste of $40, really. And I'm a huge Batman fan. I don't think I've ever hidden that fact. So, yeah.
It's just okay. This is just WB seeing if they could get away with it. And obviously, if they can get away with it, they're going to do it again.
Well, they can get away with it. That's the problem.
It's just like this exploitation of the consumer, really, with, like, saying, like, yeah, here's this prequel thing coming. You might not get the whole story if you don't play this thing. And in the end, it turns out, yeah, it wasn't really necessary or that good. And you shouldn't probably have not spent any money on it.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's... okay, I guess... This, I guess, not necessarily negative, but Capcom's going to Capcom, so their financial statement is pretty much, we have nothing for this year, so we're going to make these vague promises to you folks. That Monster Hunter Stories and Street Fighter V are due out by the end of this fiscal year, which would be March 2016 for us. I can possibly see Monster Hunter Stories hit in Japan in time for that. And that's
about
it. It
won't hit the West.
Yeah, probably not the West. Sadly.
Actually, that's the point, because Street Fighter is probably more likely to release internationally, and that's unlikely to hit this fiscal year if they're going to do that. So, I don't know. It's just, Capcom is very sad, you know? Very sad these days. I just want, what is it, EX Troopers? That's what I'm really sad about, because I never got to play EX Troopers.
Well, wasn't that
I
because...
I want Monster Hunter Stories, I want EX Troopers.
Wasn't that that weird thing where they decided to hard-code the Japanese language so they couldn't translate it?
Yeah, yeah.
Without redoing the
game? It was that the text was in text bubbles, and the text wasn't actual text, but pictures. And therefore,
yeah.
It would have been real work basically doing new pictures with text in them.
Yeah, so that just sounds way too expensive for a game that probably isn't worth it. But yes, they also promised more remasters and re-releases. And if you've ever followed Capcom, that pretty much is the standard operating procedure for their business.
At this point.
I mean, how many places can you get Resident Evil and Resident Evil 4? Resident Evil Code Veronica.
They just put out, not too long ago, the Resident Evil Remake Remaster.
which is a remastered of a remake of a re-release, because this is the Wii version of the GameCube game, which is a part of the PlayStation game.
Yep.
Yeah. So, like I said, it's standard operating
procedure. I'm so glad you got that straight.
I mean, I have Capcom for that. It's just, you know, especially, and this, I'm probably sure this comes up the Street Fighter V thing as well. When Capcom says exclusive, that has never meant anything to them.
Even because they need the cash.
Even when other companies pay for it, it still means nothing to them.
Yep.
So, we'll see. Okay, so for more positive news, I don't know if it's more positive. We'll see where this goes. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5 was announced. And I'm curious what you think, because I actually lost interest in it, because it's like, this is Tony Hawk going back to basics, and then it's like, you can get power-ups and weapons. I'm like, what part of that is basic?
Well,
I think for me, the whole thing broke down when it said, it is developed by Robomoto.
Yeah, that's the problem, is I don't know anything about, like, the last game that I played that was anything like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater was probably Dave Mirra's BMX on the PS1, and even then, that's not a Tony Hawk Pro Skater game. But from what I know, is that company couldn't even take the best one in the series and put it on the 360 and PS3 and get it right. So I don't understand why anybody would get hyped about this.
Well, I think because, you know, it's a numbered Tony Hawk game, and just to kind of show you the type of resume we're working with, their history includes Tony Hawk Ride, which I'm sure everybody remembers, Tony Hawk Shred, which I'm sure people remember even more, Big League Sports Connect, Tony Hawk Pro Skater HD, which I've actually heard really terrible things about that port.
The thing is, the HD version of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater is not a, it's not a remake or a port at all, really. It's a new game, but they put the old maps in it, and the new game doesn't feel nice to play. That's the problem with it.
Yeah, so I'm not usually the type. The game doesn't look that great, visually, from what I saw.
Yeah.
It's like, it has this weird, it's photo captured faces, but it doesn't really align with the bodies. It looks really strange.
Yeah, I think it looks like a low rent last gen game that someone threw a bunch of shaders at.
Yeah, and I mean, even to that point, and this is the other announcement, the return of Tony Hawk Pro Skater, you'd think would be a big story from Activision, but they were smart enough to give Disney Infinity 3.0 the Game Informer cover instead of Tony Hawk, just to kind of show you the confidence they have in that. But yes,
it's a shame, because like, there's a market out there for skating games, because there aren't any apart from Olly Olly, you know?
Whatever
so
happened to,
they could swoop in and take it.
What happened to Skate?
Yeah, no, just, nobody bought
the company that developed
Skate
it doesn't
3.
Exist anymore.
Oh.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, Disney...
Because
Infinity,
for some reason EA thought it had to be a yearly franchise
and
died quickly.
I mean, you would think they'd learn from Tony Hawk, which did the EA franchise thing and died quickly.
Well, here we are.
Here we are again. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Speaking of things that probably doesn't need to be a sequel, Disney Infinity 3.0 was announced. And surprising absolutely nobody, it has a heavy Star Wars emphasis. I'm sure nobody saw that coming.
I am shocked. You're telling me in the year that Star Wars is returning to cinemas, they're bringing out Disney Infinity with Star Wars?
I know. It blindsided me completely. I was like, what? I was actually I would say I was surprised though that they're leading this off with Star Wars Clone Wars figures and not actual movie figures.
Yeah, that was the moment they lost me. I was kind of, I mean, this Star Wars, the Disney Infinity games are not that great, but Disney Infinity Star Wars, I could see maybe that could be kind of fun, but give me, I don't know, old trilogy, give me this new trilogy, don't give me what they are giving me.
Yeah, and the other thing is that this has a lot of cooks in the kitchen. Ninja Theory's working on it, Studio Gobo, I think Sumo Digital's working on this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who are doing a lot of different stuff for this. So apparently reading this, and this is an improvement, is it seems like any Star Wars figure would work in any of the Star Wars play sets, which you would think would be a no-brainer, but not all the Marvel characters worked in all the Marvel
play sets. Why can't they just say all the toys work in all the play sets? Like, that's what people have been asking for since the beginning.
I don't know. I can just assume it's a Disney branding thing. Someone has a real hard on for stuff being very
brand
particular.
Consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, yeah, and it's weird, because we mentioned this when we talked about Ego Dimension. It's Disney. It's not like you are fighting with any licensees. You're Disney making a Disney game, and you don't know why you can't. It's weird. But yes, at least they're doing that with Star Wars, where it's not going to have that weird disconnect, where you can use Spider-Man in the Avengers set, but you can't use him in an X-Men set or whatever. Let's see. This is exciting, even though it won't pay off for a while. Nintendo Universal announced a partnership to bring Nintendo IPs to their theme parks.
I'm kind of surprised they haven't done this before. Like, what? There's no reason for them to have not done it before. You know? And,
personally, I don't know how exciting that is to me.
It's that exciting to you because you're in Europe, and apparently Universal doesn't have much of a presence there. But
let's go with no presence.
Yeah. Well, it's a great excuse for you to visit Japan or the wonderful country that is America. Even though, I'm sorry, because then you'd have to go to Florida, and it's not necessarily the best representation of us. But to Daniel's point, and I think we've mentioned this before, we mentioned this with the mobile game, and we kind of mentioned this when the rumored Zelda TV show was going to happen, and the Mario movie was a thing that was rumored, is that Nintendo got burnt with licenses in the early 90s, and it looked like they took the it's Nintendo, of course they took the extreme, and they said, like, no more, and they just kind of cut off any type of outside marketing deals with anybody.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, like they spent the last 3 years, or I guess before this, using money, and they're like, okay, we're going to have to find an outside source. Which is why, I mean, look, they made money. In the past, 5.5 months, they sold 10.5 amiibo. That's money they could have been making years ago if they were big into selling their action figures. They have the mobile game stuff coming out this year. And they also, don't necessarily know how this is. They said they want 5 mobile games by the end of March 2017, which I actually think is very conservative. But at least I hope that means they're going for quality. Well, they are going for quality over quantity.
Yeah.
Everybody got excited for the Legend of Zelda Netflix show, even though that hasn't really panned out. I mean, granted, people were kind of iffy on it being live action, but people want to see these IPs. These are IPs that have been populated for over 30 years, but it's really hard, you know, like, if you go back into the early 90s, you had stuff like the Mario movie, you had that really awful CG Donkey Kong Country cartoon, you had really terrible Legend of Zelda cartoon. And it looks like they were just like, okay, nobody's doing our IPs respectfully, so we're just going to knock them up and not let anybody but us touch them. And part of that is fair. This is how you kind of cultivate an IP that doesn't water itself down. Like, but at the same time, you can also cultivate an IP that remains popular. Look at Sonic. Sonic hasn't really been great recently, but he has TV shows, he has comic books, he has video games, and he remains in the mainstream consciousness for that reason.
for better or for worse.
Yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we hear something about maybe a Nintendo comic book coming from Archie, who already does Sonic and Mega Man, and those comics do well. And they have the tone, and they have the talent, and stuff like that. That would be great. But to get back to this point, I'm excited for the idea of a Nintendo. Well, you see, I guess that's the thing. I can't be excited too much because I don't know what it is. Like, they just said they're in a partnership. Like, this could literally just be like Nintendo characters dressed up and walking around Universal Studios, and that could be the extent of the partnership. Or it could be something like Potterland, the Harry Potter attraction we opened up a few years ago, where it's this huge island dedicated to Harry Potter. Or it can just be like a Pokemon merry-go-round, and that's it. So, it's an interesting and intriguing...
Universal's good at their slicing stuff, though, so they should...
Yeah.
It should be... Whatever they do, it should be pretty substantial.
It should be, but, you know, it could be Nintendo being like, okay, we don't like
Nintendo,
that idea. Yeah. And to that point, it's the same thing that happened when they announced mobile games, and it's the same thing when they announced, you know, the Legend of Zelda stuff. It's like you realize how fast and kind of, not necessarily, I don't want to say generic, but how adaptable their IPs are. Because, like, this came out, and that day, like, everybody had, like, 50 ideas of what they wanted to see. They wanted to see a Mario Kart roller coaster. Even though you would think Mario Kart would make more sense for go-karting, but, I mean, that may be a little too on the nose. A Nintendo Land, an actual Nintendo Land, like the video game. Luigi's Haunted Mansion. Somebody mentioned, like, a Planet Zeebs kind of attraction. There's a ton of things they can do. You can do, like, a Pikmin Safari. They have
a boy, were you on the way out, please?
You can do exclusive amiibos.
Yeah.
Oh, don't give them that idea. I don't want to see dead children.
Well, I was going to say it's actually not it's not a new idea. It's actually what Disney does. This Disney sells certain stuff you can only find in Disney World and Disneyland, and you can only and some of these are seasonal, so you can only get like it's only available during the winter seasons in Disneyland or something like that.
Jesus Christ, and it's devious.
I know. The only reason I know this is one of my coworkers collects Disney memorabilia, and he tells me, like, yeah, I got this. Like, it was, like, October of 2010. It was the only time Disney sold it, and I had to go. I'm like, that is insane. I mean, people think store exclusive stuff is terrible. Imagine having it sold one place in the world one time of the year, ever. But yes, I can imagine, like, they could have the Mario for Mario Sunshine as the summer one. They could have a Top Hat Mario for the wedding season. It's going to be insane. But yeah, the other reason this is, it's intriguing, but the reason it's kind of whatever is, like, okay, like, Harry Potter Land took 3 years from when they announced it to when it opened. They just announced a King Kong attraction that's going to open up next year, and that was in the works for a year and a half before they announced it. So we're looking at maybe 2018, 2019 for any of this stuff to actually become reality for us. So it's like, yay, but this is so far in the future. It's like, I get why they announced it to make investors happy, but it's like, they didn't even give us an idea of what they want to do together.
Yeah. I mean, really, they should have done this a decade ago, but, you know.
Well, yeah.
Better late than never.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been awesome. I would have been young. Like, now I'm just at that weird age where I'm going to have to wait until I have kids. Because it's really weird going to an amusement park as your own as an adult.
Yeah.
Okay, and the final piece of news, which isn't really news because this kind of threw past all of its goals. Yoki, wow.
Ukulele.
Yes, like the instrument. Make banjo. They are really kind of on the nose with the whole, this is a Banjo-Kazooie's spiritual successor.
Well, no shit.
Yes. Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's a sequel in everything but name and character design.
I was about to say, character design is pretty much Rare's trademark right now. It's an animal with giant puppy eyes.
Hmm.
But yeah, they set up the Kickstarter May 1st. It hit its goal within 3 hours?
It hit its goal within 40-something minutes.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, okay. And it hit all of its stretch goals within the day, and it hit all of its secondary stretch goals within the weekend. Yep. I believe now it's on its third set of stretch goals, and at this point, it already seems like we have nothing. We're just going to... We want you to give us money, but we have nothing. Like, I think this stretch goal is literally like, we're going to make the game better.
No, you know, they're still going for the orchestral soundtrack right now.
Okay. Which is making it, like, it's cool, but it's like, it doesn't change much. But yeah, I think there was one stretch goal, which is like, we're going to do it. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, we got nothing now, which I hope is a good thing.
I think it's a good thing.
Oh, it is a good thing.
Yeah,
well, I meant a good thing in the sense that they budgeted this correctly, because we've had a lot of Kickstarters that have far exceeded their goals and still end up broke.
It shows they have a pretty clear idea about what they wanted to do and what they think they could do with the money, and it shows that they are not doing the mistake some game Kickstarters do and fall into the trap of adding stuff that actually results in feature creep. And that means you can easily go over budget, or you promise something you might not be able to deliver for one reason or another.
Yeah, yeah, which I'm happy for. And it's, you know, I think the biggest thing with this, and I think some have done it, but not... They've actually shown gameplay when they revealed this game. They've shown gameplay, they have actual music samples and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a game that isn't just starting tomorrow. It's a game they've been working on. And, yeah, and the other stretch goals, it's coming to all systems day one at this point. And I'm sure they're looking into other stuff, but it seems like a lot of the stuff they're looking into probably won't be necessary in-game. Like, I know one of them was, like, that they're going to do a GK rap.
Yeah.
And I think one was to actually get David... Is it David Wise or Grant... One of them to, like, perform outside of E3.
Grant Kirkhope, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Grant Kirkhope was up for anything. He's crazy.
I'm sure they all are excited because... And I think he actually tweeted this. Because for years and years and years, they've been told this isn't the type of game people want anymore. And this shattered Kickstarter records... And now it's a game. It's a game that people want, but I hope that fans don't necessarily take it to me like, okay, this is example that everybody needs to start doing this. Because getting 30,000 people to support your Kickstarter is much different than trying to get EA or Ubisoft or Activision.
Yeah,
to make
but on the other hand, it's not like it won't sell beyond the 40,000. It's just that not everyone is backing a Kickstarter.
Well,
yeah.
And
the thing is like there are a lot of things about this Kickstarter that they've done right. Like you say, they've shown gameplay. You know, maybe the budget was a bit too modest. I don't think that they could have made it.
No, they said they would have made the game anyway.
It said
on the page. It's just this money allows them to make a bigger and better game. They have private funds that they want to use.
It helps that the game is really cheap. You know, you pay $15 and you get a PC version, or $20 and you get a console version. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of these kinds of games, but for a tenner up, yeah, okay.
Yeah, anyway. See that is the problem. I'm not a fan of their type of 3D platformers. And I know there's a lot of people who swear by Banjo-Kazooie and all that other stuff, but to me, that type of stuff just kind of took the worst parts of Mario 64 and kept on expanding it. But, I mean, I think the other thing that really... I will also say I haven't supported this Kickstarter. I don't do Kickstarter anymore after being burnt, like, three times. But
I supported it. I don't know why.
I was going to say, the other thing that I think was very important with this Kickstarter was them making... the presentation back when they did in March, and just kind of, like, you know, alleviating fans' fears and just kind of having a good time with the Q&A, like, telling you that, you know, like, we understood why people had problems with Donkey Kong 64, and we're not looking to make that mistake anymore. And I'm happy for that, because that was an awful 3D platformer.
Yeah.
But, yes, I... but at the same time, I'm all for diversity in the game phase. And I'll buy it just because we don't get many of these games anymore.
Yeah.
And I love the Mario Galaxy games and the Mario 3D World and 3DN. Those are different than the School of Mario 64 3D platformers.
Mm.
And people enjoy that. Like, you can have the Mario style, but, you know, there is another style that doesn't really get catered to anymore.
Yeah. And
oh, no, especially not on non-Nintendo consoles as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me it was more why I backed it. I know why I backed it. I thought, like, I'm not the biggest Rare fan, but I like Banjo and I like 3D platformers. Not that I don't like them. And I thought, like, yeah, I would like to play something more like this other than the occasional Mario 3D title that comes out every 3 or 4 years. Because
yeah.
At this point, that's the only kind of title in that, somewhat in that vein that still exists.
Yeah, and because I think, not necessarily that I think they're expensive to make, but I think more than any other genre, it values creativity over, like, pure muscle.
Hmm.
I don't want to say it's more creative than other genres, but you look at something like Mario Galaxy, and you could pour a ton of money into trying to replicate that, but if you don't have the creativity that Nintendo's team did in creating that game, you're not going to get a great game out of it. You're going to get something that may... I mean, not to pick on him too much, but get the Sonic games. Like, Sonic has a ton of money poured into him, and his 3D games are awful.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay, I think that's that for the news this week. Unless you gentlemen have anything else we missed out on?
Not that I'm aware of. I've been busy, so...
Yes. So, that means it's time for Game Impressions, and it's been a doozy. It's been interesting, I think, because I don't think there's been any major retail titles in the past 2 weeks, but I think there's been a lot of little things come out that have been enjoyable, and just to kind of start it off, because he also has a review up on the site, Martin's going to tell us about Wolfenstein, the old, well, both of you, played it.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah. I really liked The New Order when it came out. I wasn't as big on it as some people, because I thought, I still remember having some gripes with it. Like, I didn't think the tone was consistent enough. I thought that the balance between stealth and pure action wasn't as well thought out, and I think that the second half of the game relied too much on big, heavy, armored dudes, which are basically just bullet sponges, and they were not so much to fight as the normal enemies, let's say. And I think Wolfenstein the Old Blood kinda does all these three things differently. I think the tone is way more consistent. I do very much like that they brought back the occult part of Wolfenstein, which we didn't see in the New Order, but we, at the same time, we also learn why there is no more occult experimentation within the Nazi regime. And I also think that they have struck a better balance between the stealth and the pure action part. Mostly, I think the balance in the New Order wasn't as good, because, of course, you could stealth through some sections, but it wasn't really as rewarding as it is in the Old Blood, since they use more of the officers, which can raise the alarm and call for backup, which I felt like they were not as heavily used in the New Order. And in that sense, it makes sense to stealth if you don't want to encounter a lot of guys, but if you just want to shoot a bunch of guys, you can still totally do that. And yeah, and lastly, the big heavily armored dudes are in this game, but they are used very, very sparingly. And that keeps the Wolfenstein combat just very fast and brutal, because also, since you don't have that many armored guys, well, it's more likely that you will shoot some limbs off and stuff like that, which is fun in a Wolfenstein title. I mean, it's part of the charm that it's incredibly violent and, well, you get to kill a lot of Nazis. So yeah, I think, for me personally, I actually enjoyed it a little bit more than the title that came before.
See, it's funny you think that, because I actually enjoyed The Old Blood less. They made a bunch of changes that I'm really not a fan of. Like, they give you a bolt-action rifle, which is a new weapon. I say a new weapon because it wasn't in the New Order. And they designed the level, all the levels, as soon as they give you the bolt-action rifle, all the levels were designed for it to be used, but you don't get a whole lot of ammo for it. And
that is interesting that you say that, because I barely even use the bolt-action rifle.
Well, this is it, is all the levels are really big, and the other weapons aren't really designed to be used in big levels.
Yeah, but you say you have to use a bolt-action rifle. I barely use that gun.
Well, I felt like the game was trying to pressure me into using it.
I only used it during the sequence in which you are stuck on this sky rail.
Yeah.
That's basically the only moment I made heavy use of that gun. Otherwise, I kind of didn't use it.
Well,
it really isn't necessary. Like you think you have to use it.
I don't know.
It's probably your playstyle. I'm just saying.
The other thing was that I feel like they made stealth less. Like, you say stealth was more rewarding, but I feel like in the New Order, you could get past most situations by stealthing.
Yep.
Whereas there are less situations in the Old Blood where you can, because there are more enemies that can't be taken out. I don't know, it just didn't feel like you got as much choice in how they wanted you to complete.
I don't agree at all. I basically stealth through the whole game. It's just
weird.
It's just the I think it's like three moments or something like that that you can't stealth through, because it's when an ambush happens.
And again, I like about the tone is I had no problems with the tone in the New Order. In fact, I really liked what was there, and because there was kind of less of everything, it meant that the tone wasn't as inconsistent. But there was also, like, no tone to be inconsistent at the same time. So,
the stories, which they have bones, but
yeah,
I didn't mind it.
And so, I just feel like it's the New Order, but light. And I'd just rather play the New Order instead. Because of that. But it wasn't a waste of my time. You know, the combat's still really good. The hamminess is still kind of there, but not. And I like that. It's just the fact that it was, in every way, it felt it was the New Order, but less, to me. But I don't hate it. Not by any means.
Okay.
I just wish they had not included a final boss again, because the last one was terrible.
Yeah, that was for me maybe the only real negative point, I guess. But I thought even on, like, I played on the second to last difficulty level, the one before Uber, what it's called. I'm Death Incarnate? I don't know. It wasn't that hard. I think I've beaten him in, like, 3 tries or something. Basically, there are a couple of spots on that map where you can just stand and final boss is even better.
It wasn't
able to
the boss
you.
That was a problem. It was the Nazis that was a problem.
Oh, really?
For me, yeah. Because they would turn up and they would just, like, the most vivid example was, like, a Nazi jumped. I was on the bottom floor and a Nazi jumped down in front of me and he was looking at the boss and then he turns right around and starts shooting at the face. And it's like, you should be shooting at the boss. Like, anybody else would be shooting at the boss instead of me.
I kind of ignored the Nazis because the boss was kind of killing them for me.
So, you know, that's kind of what annoyed me. I just, like, if you had a bad boss last time, don't do one again this time, you know?
Yeah, but I have to say, I really have to disagree with you. I felt like I had more options in this game than I had in the New Order. And especially stealth felt way better for me, because in the New Order, at some point, I kind of gave up on stealth, while this time I played through the whole thing super stealthy.
Yeah, it might be because the New Order is also a lot longer. That might have been why you gave up on stealth, maybe?
I don't know. It was just that doing stealthy things didn't feel like I got more out of it. It was just kind of easier to attack things head on, and since they now actually use more of the officers, it felt like, and taking them out stealthily did help if you didn't want to encounter a lot of guys, which I tried to, because I was playing on a very high difficulty, and while it would of course still be possible to just do it in the action way, and I did that a couple of times, of course, when I was when I might have been found or something like that. But of course, it's easier if you don't encounter that many guys. So yeah, for me it was the stealth thing. But like I said, there were, like, I think 3 scenarios where I couldn't stealth my way through, and that's basically it. It was the prologue. Then one time when you had to escape on railway, because that triggered an alarm. And then one time during the end, somewhere near the end, I can't remember right now. Those were like the only times when you couldn't stealth through it. Well, and I guess when you're just fighting zombies, but what's the point of going stealthy through zombies? That doesn't really count. I mean, the zombies are kind of no threat, if you really think about it. But
no, they weren't.
Zombies are always a threat. You never take them lightly. This is how people end up dead. But
what, you have a really good shotgun in this?
A really good shotgun with a really bad sound effect, I would say. I really don't like the sound effect on the Sonov. Minor gripe.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. But overall, I think, like, yeah, this is a really great thing, and I mean, it's just $20, so for that,
if you like the New Order, then you're not going to hate it.
It's just, I felt like for $20, it was, like, incredible value.
Yeah, if you like the New Order, by all means, pick it up, but, like, obviously, if you don't like the New Order, then it probably
won't. This isn't going to change your mind.
Yeah.
And if you think that's a great deal, check out the WWE Network for just $9.99.
No, don't do that.
No good content with it.
Don't do it.
The network is great. For $9.99 a month.
Content from 10 years ago.
Yes. What is wrestling if not nostalgic at this point?
You could be watching New Japan for just 999 yen.
But not in English.
Shit.
Speaking of discounts, I think we all checked out at least the demo. We did Puzzles and Dragons Z and Puzzles and Dragons Super Mario Brothers for the Nintendo 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
It's Puzzles and Dragons. If you've ever played Puzzles and Dragons, you know what to expect. It's a match 3 puzzle game. I think the biggest difference here from other match 3 puzzle games is the fact that you can move your piece free for about 5 seconds. And this you can basically create chains by moving other pieces into a line while trying to move one piece to create a setup. And I think that's different from most match 3, which is usually just kind of swipe left and right, up and down between pieces so that they match up and whatever.
Or either that, you just swap two. Yeah. It took me a while before I realized that I was actually knocking pieces around as I was tracking it. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. It's once you get the handle of that, it's pretty amazing, because you then start thinking about not, okay, I take this bubble to these two to create this one free line. No, I take something completely different and then move around a couple of other bubbles that then all create combos. And what I've where this one I actually picked up lands, it's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can still kind of...
Oh, yeah, of course, you can still put it in the place where it also helps. But, yeah, that's the gist of how you get good at Puzzle and Dragons.
Yeah, the other thing, though, and this is something I learned the hard way, is you don't actually have to make a match during your turn before it ends. So, yeah, be wary of the timer, because you can not make any moves. And I guess the other big difference from a lot of match 3 puzzle games is this is actually a mini RPG, in that you have enemies that you do battle with, and you do battle with by matching various pieces on the board. Like, the green pieces in this game gives you health, the red pieces give you fire, blue is usually water or ice, and stuff like that. So different enemies have different weaknesses, different attributes, matching certain pieces together, like... Based on your character, like, I think the ones in the demo are Mario and Luigi. I think it gives you greater attack power when you match three in general. And then Expert, I believe there's like a 25% boost to water power when you use Ghost Mario, Boo Mario, and Ice Luigi. And you recruit enemies to your party, and they help as your team. They give you different attributes, and these are also the orbs on the screen. So, depending on who you have, they have different powers, different abilities, and stuff like that. One thing I would warn people about, especially if you are really tired of it, it does use this new Super Mario Bros. Aesthetic and music. So, if you got tired with that with the four previous games, yeah.
The impression I got was, like, with this new Super Mario Brothers portion, it was like very clear that this was not a Nintendo game, but they put a Nintendo skin on it. There's a lot of things that just sort of Nintendo has a very sort of consistent style across all their Mario games, and this is just not it. And I was just like, this. It just feels like it's Mario for the sake of being Mario and not.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty much what... I mean, like you said, this is pretty much the Mario aesthetic applied to Puzzles and Dragons. Like, there isn't anything uniquely Mario outside of, okay, we took assets from New Super Mario Brothers, and here you go. Because New Super Mario Brothers are the easiest assets to copy, because Nintendo does it all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, personally, I bought the game. I really like it. And I also played a bit of the Puzzle and Dragons Z portion of it. And I would say the Puzzle and Dragons Z game is actually better than the Mario Bros. Version. It's a bit faster. It's a bit more complex. Because you have way more diversity when it comes to the monsters you can use. And it also gives you a bit more opportunities when it comes to the upgrading and stuff. So, but that's also why I actually started then to think, like, yeah, I should probably play through the Mario Bros. Version first, because otherwise it would actually look like, seem like a regression. So that's also what I would probably recommend to people. Play the Mario Bros. Version first, and then go to the Puzzle Dragons Z version.
Yeah,
whereas for me, it's just like Puzzle and Dragons is not my kind of thing.
Yeah, which is fair.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. And if you're iffy, there is, like we said, there's the 3DS demo, and even that is not enough. You could just download Puzzle and Dragon on your mobile device and imagine it without the free-to-play hooks.
Okay. Anything else you two want to talk about?
Today I picked up Kerbal Space Program after I have heard that it's now actually done and has a campaign you can play. Kerbal Space Program is a simulation game in which you have these cute little guys that apparently want nothing more than go to space, and you build spaceships for them, and hopefully you get them into space and make sure they don't die, I guess. It's cute, it's cool what kind of opportunities you have at building spaceships. They give you a lot of stuff to play with, and it's even better that there is some real meat under there, with, like, the physics in this are really cool, in the sense that you actually learn something about how interstellar travel works, in the sense of, oh, great, how would I get a spaceship to the moon, and, in this game, you learn, like, okay, I have to build a ship with so many start sequences to actually get into an orbit around my home planet, and then from there create an interception course to the moon so that I then can get into an orbit off the moon and then actually land on it and stuff like that. You actually learn something, and it's super interesting, and they even have, like, some good tutorials to teach you how all this stuff works. And the campaign is kind of fun with, you get, like, basically milestones you have to reach, like, hey, get your first spaceship into an orbit, or you can get contracts to basically create, like, passenger planes so you can take people with you, or you have to test out equipment. All that stuff can give you science points or money, and from the money you can buy parts, because every time you build a new rocket or chip, it costs money, of course. And the science helps you to unlock more parts and upgrade your space organization. Now that this is done, I think this seems like a really cool game, and I will definitely play more of it.
Well, NASA seems to like it.
Yeah, I saw that NASA and even the ESA are both, like, recommending this game, and I can see why.
I was going to ask, when does the U.S. government come in and defund the game for you, or is that not a feature of the game yet?
Yeah, but that's the thing. But
it might be a mod if you're lucky.
but like I said, that's the thing. While it is scientifically all sound in this game, they found a way to make it all approachable, I feel like. And that's not easy, I think, especially with this as the subject.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly started a movie and that thing. So it's nice that somebody can dumb it down for us.
Yeah.
And they can make it really cute as well, because, like, when you launch a rocket, you see the Kerbals you've got in the rocket in the corner. So if they're going up too fast, they're really frightened and they're scared and they're shaking in their chairs and stuff. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Or sometimes they are happy. It depends on the Kerbal.
Yeah.
Because all Kerbals now have, like, different stats. It's like how brave they are and how stupid they are. Those are the stats you get for your Kerbals when you hire them. And it's kind of great.
You always want somebody brave and stupid. They do just the hard stuff.
Yeah,
so
but
I guess
fun game.
Fun game. And speaking of fun games and weird doodle experiments, I've been checking out this Splatoon Global Test Fire. Okay, basically the beta for Splatoon. I don't care what Nintendo calls it. And I think I've said this since last E3. I've had huge expectations for this game. It looks really fun and fresh and different. And I was so happy that when I got the beta, it actually kind of lived up to that. It's just a throw-to-play-through. And, I mean, right off the back, and I think this is something that I said when it was first debuted, and something, I think the fact that you contribute to the game no matter what you do, like, there's a lot of games, especially shooters, where, like, if you're not cooking things, you kind of feel like you aren't doing anything, or even worse, you probably can be taken away from the team if you get killed often enough. I hate having negative kill death ratios in like Halo or Call of Duty because it just means that my team, I'm not helping my team at all.
Mm.
And in this game, the objective isn't to kill, well, okay, splat other people. It's actually to just paint the most amount of territory horizontally. Nothing on the walls count. So, like, if you just run around your base all day painting that area, then you're contributing because you're making sure that base is covered. If you jump into battle and actually do engage people and splat, oh, kill them, I'm not going to go through this whole splat stuff. That's also helping. You don't get any points for actually killing anybody. But you do, like, when you kill them, they kind of explode in your paint color, so you do get to spread a little bit of that. And, you know, you push them back a bit further, and you get an additional 3 or 5 seconds uncontested and stuff like that. So I think that's really fun, and I think that's going to be a great way to kind of get people into the genre. Not that the first-person shooter genre actually needs, well, third-person shooter either, needs people to be warmed up.
Yeah.
But I like the idea that, like, you can be a novic, you can be a expert, you can be an advanced player, and you can all kind of have similar experiences with the game. That said, it does seem to favor certain stuff, and we'll get into Nintendo's write-up of this game in a bit, because that stuff is really weird. But in this beta, you have 4 weapons. You have the Royal, which I equate to this game's version of a shotgun. It's a short-distance weapon that does a massive amount of damage if you contact somebody, but the fact is you have to be close to them. And I think a lot of people find that OP right now just because it's the most noob-friendly weapon. You put it covers the most amount of ground, and running into people just is an auto one-hit kill.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with that, though, is, like, you move out on a lot of verticality because it has a small range. You can't really paint a lot of walls to climb up them. And you move much so than with any other weapon. And what I've learned during my second playthrough is that it also leaves you to be a giant target, because the best way to avoid it is just to move backwards, because they can't match your speed. So if you're moving backwards and shooting at them, you're going to kill them long before they get to you. Like, where it's dangerous, again, like with any shotgun, is in tight areas, around corners, in tight corridors and stuff like that, because there isn't much room for you to navigate. But in wide open areas, it's pretty much open season for those weapons. The weapon I haven't tried yet, and I don't necessarily think any of these maps are really great for it, is the Charge Strat, which is this game's version of a sniper. Again, since the idea isn't really to kill people, the sniper just shoots in a straight line, and everything just kind of gets painted with that color. A lot of these arenas are kind of set up to be, they have a lot of verticality, they have a lot of places to hide and corners. So a sniper isn't necessarily ideal because you can't really charge it up and shoot somebody too far away because there isn't many open areas on these two maps. My preferred weapon is the Splattershot and the Splattershot Junior. I don't really know the difference between the two, which is basically this game's version of, like, your standard assault rifle. In addition to that, you also get sub-weapons. So far, I've only found one of the sub-weapons useful, which is basically the ink grenade that they showed at E3 last year. You have ink bombs, which doesn't really do any damage, but it's great near the end when you just want to cover a bunch of ground as quickly as possible. And then there's, like, a sticky grenade, which I think comes with the sniper. I haven't used that class again, so I wouldn't know. What else is there? So, and then you have, whatever. So, yes, it's just really fun to play. One of my favorite things about it, even though I always forget about it, is, like, when you're waiting in the lobby to start the game, you can actually play a mini game on the controller, which is a nice little feature to waste time with. Right now, the game is basically Doodoo Jump, if you've ever played that on your mobile phone.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Okay, so that's that. On the negative side, and I'm just going to say again, I really, really, really do enjoy this game, but there's a lot of odd decisions. And this is the first one, and this is going to be really weird, because I tend to go along with most of the decisions. I actually do think this game needed voice chat.
Oh, yeah. Of course it did.
I mean, I thought
I told you that last year, because when I played at Gamescom, I the whole time it was like I needed, like, to be the most successful. It seemed like I really needed to communicate with my teammates on where to actually go or how to actually coordinate, because on your own you can do nothing if you run into an ambush or something like that.
Well, I mean, yeah, you can do stuff, but yeah, there are times. I think the biggest... Okay, there's two things that works against it, and one of them needed to be changed for the other one to make sense. That is, you pick your weapons before the stage starts, and you can't switch weapons during the match. So you don't know what your teammates have until you start the match.
Yeah.
And if you had changed it so that you can pick your weapon after the fact, that would have worked, because it's very redundant. Like, if you start a match and everybody has the same weapon, and it's like, you're screwed, because like every weapon has a strength and weaknesses, and as a team, you need to balance that out. So like the Royal can cover a lot of ground, but like I said, it's really tough. It's kind of an easy target, so you want scatter shot people around them to take out any type of competition. Or you want the long-range shot to kind of have that high ground if you need that. But if you have four Royals, then you don't really have anybody who can be defense for those. It's like, if you're the game I thought of when I was doing this was Team Fortress 2. It's like if you had Team Fortress 2, everybody went as a heavy, or everybody went as a pyro. Like, everything has its strength, but everything has its weakness, and the best teams are usually the ones that have enough diversity to kind of match each other. And you can kind of get that in Team Fortress 2 without communication, because you know what the engineer's job is, you know what the pyro's job is, you know what the heavy's job is. But if everybody didn't get to pick before the game began, it would be really weird. And this is the problem. So, if you don't have voice chat, you should have given us the option to pick when the game started. If you do have voice chat, it's not a problem.
All they have to do is have, like, a countdown in the lobby and show you what everybody on your team is picking, so you can...
But that's the other problem. Not necessarily a problem, but again, another system that works against the whole idea is that the teams are randomized. So you don't even know who's on your team until it starts.
Oh.
And
okay.
it changes every round. So it's not like you have the same four people. And you can't switch weapons in between rounds. You have to go out of the menu and then change the weapons.
Huh.
So yeah, I get what they're going for, and it does seem like it's going to be one of those things that are going to introduce later on. But yeah, if they were doing this, they needed some type of balance for the system. And right now, it's like, yeah, like I can be covering an area, or what happens is a lot of people charge one way at the start of the match, and then I just kind of hang back and see where we're not being covered, because there's no way to communicate with your team. If everybody's going right, that means nobody's covering left or something like that. Or, like, if we all get stuck in the middle, don't go, there's a trap or something. Like, there's not even, like, voice commands. Like, they give you two things. It's like, booyah, and I need help or something like that on the D-pad. The other thing... And this is not necessarily from the beta, but they had a Nintendo Direct in this game. How they're rolling out this game, I get what they're trying to do, but it makes it annoying to be a day one purchaser, because day one, you get five maps, one mode, and that's it. And then over the course of the next 3 months, they'll be giving you new maps, giving you new gear, giving you, I think, three new gameplay modes. And I get the idea is to kind of ease people into it so that everybody kind of has an idea, and then you kind of start introducing the more advanced modes and the more advanced maps. I don't, again, it's one of those things where it's Nintendo being Nintendo, and I don't necessarily get why they needed to do this. Like, the system they have in place for Splat Zone, which is the second mode, makes sense. Wait until a certain amount of people hit level 10 and then you open that up. Okay, that's fine. That means that there's some skill involved in that, and you want to make sure that everybody who's playing it is on an equal level of skill. And then the rest of them is just like, whenever. I don't know. It could be June. It could be July. It could be August. Who knows? We'll let you know. And it's the same thing with... I don't necessarily mind it because I enjoy the maps, but the whole thing with the maps, where you can play two maps for 4 hours... And then they'll cycle out two more maps for 4 hours, and then two more maps for 4 hours, which is an odd way of doing it. I mean, this whole thing is an odd way of doing it. But
I just don't understand the purpose of that, because, like, FPS games have had map cycles for ages, and it works, you know? There's nothing about it that's a problem, you know?
I think, again, it's one of the system. I think their idea is that, okay, we're going to focus on these two maps so that you can learn the strategies of them. And, okay, you know, like, this map is going to be heavy for the splatter, this one's going to be heavy for the charge shot and stuff like that. So the idea is, their thinking, which I get, is that they want everybody to experience the game. So it's going to be like, okay, we're going to have these maps, and these are the type of weapons you use, so that everybody can try out this weapon, and everybody can be on an equal level with this. And I'm hoping that this is stuff they do at launch, and then after a while they're just like, okay, we've done this, now you can go play the game. And, I mean, that's going to...
Nintendo's creating problems, and it's like... I, you know, there is no other game that is this is required for, you know, but it has to happen in a Nintendo game because Nintendo, and this is just Nintendo all over, and I wish it would just stop, you know, stop creating problems, because, you know, that's what you don't want to do. You don't want to create a problem, because then you will put effort into solving it. I don't know.
I've seen people getting to shooters
without this, you know?
Some of this seems like Nintendo thinks just because they have never done a shooter, they assume people have never played a shooter
in
the system. And that's most likely not the case, Nintendo.
And I've seen people go right into Call of Duty from not really playing many games at all, go right into Call of Duty, and okay, they stumbled a bit when they started out, but they don't have any problem, because if you design your maps so they have, so they're recognizable from one another, and they have landmarks, you can say, oh, go over to the waterfall, or go over to the red base, or go over to the blue base.
And create natural choke points.
Yeah, and natural choke points and strategic areas where it's going to be, you get high ground and stuff. You don't need to restrict them, because people will learn them really quickly, you know?
Yeah, like I said, I get their thinking, I don't necessarily...
It's just Nintendo hand-holding, and there's no reason for them to do it, you know? The same with the voice chat. They always use the excuse of, oh, we need it to improve the network connectivity. No, you don't. I've played games that have 100 people in them.
Well, no, that's not the excuse. That's not the excuse they used here. The excuse here. And I understand their reasoning. You know, as everybody, they should have made it an option. I understand. Online gaming can be a very toxic environment, and it's a company that's really kind of catered towards families and children. You probably don't necessarily want to expose people to that. I think they could have made it optional, or they could have made it so that maybe they'll introduce, again, another one of the weird things. You can play with your friends, but you don't necessarily have to be on the same team with your friends in the first wave, and then in August they'll introduce the ability to play with your friends.
Believe it or not, Sony had solved this problem before, right? They didn't intentionally solve it, but they solved the online community toxicity problem, the PS3. And the way they solved it was by not shipping a console with a microphone, right? So, yeah, it can cause problems, but if some people have microphones and some people don't, you're going to get a sort of environment where the people who really want to communicate, like, you know, they've gone out of their way to buy a microphone, and, you know, they're probably not going to be toxic. There will be some, but, you know, whereas the reason why Xbox Live was so derided for its toxic environment is because you bought an Xbox 360 and you got a headset with it.
I was actually going to say the opposite. I actually thought Microsoft solved the problem with the party chat. Having an ability to just communicate with your friends instead of actually having to be in the game.
No, I would argue that exacerbates. Like, what that does is that creates the problem if you can't communicate with anybody, because everyone's in a party chat then.
Yeah, which is the point. Like, you want to communicate with your friends. You don't want to be in a game and being called an N-word or a sissy or an F, anything like that. I mean, it happens on PlayStation. It happened on PlayStation 3 as well. I remember Uncharted used to be like that. I mean, Sony made both of them make it really easy to mute people, and that's what really ended up happening. It's an odd decision, but yeah, I completely understand their decision.
And then actually, you could have voice commands really easy on the Wii U, because you just push the, you know, have them all listed on the game on the gamepad, and you push one.
Yeah, and you have a mic built into the system. I mean, it's on the controller, and this game uses a controller. But like I said, I understand their reasoning. Again, it should have been an option. Or, like, when they introduce this update, make it so that you can, like Mario Kart, you can only communicate via voice when you're with friends. You can't do it in a normal lobby. But if you're in a lobby with friends, you're able to speak to them that way. And that's a solution as well. maybe not the most elegant one, but it's something. Yeah. I guess going back to the online, I haven't mentioned this. I really had a great experience with it as far as like the connectivity went. The first time was kind of rough, and if you played with my connection, you know that. I played again during the second one, smooth. I played for the complete hour, no disconnects, no. It didn't seem to have much lag. It remained smooth at 60 frames per second. I am going to be one of those staffs. I'm going to pick up Splatoon day one, even with all of its online quirks. It seems to have a pretty robust single-player mode. It reminds me a lot of... It's like the miniature stages of Mario Galaxy meet Ixfield from Mario Sunshine in a nice little shooter format. I think the shooting, the multiplayer is just a real blast to play right now. I think it's just a refreshing shooter. Like I said, the closest thing it reminds me of is Team Fortress 2, and that, and just having the different weapons and having them have specific roles in the game.
Yeah. It sounds like Nintendo's got a decent sort of base, but, like, it's just Nintendo things get in the way, as usual. You know? And is he gone again?
No, I'm here. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
No, I think it's a solid base, and I think that by August, when they get all this stuff out, I think it would be a really fun game to pick up. I just think that it's really, like I said, I think the reason they're doing all this rollout stuff is that they want people to continue playing it throughout the summer, because honestly speaking, when you look at, there's nothing on the Wii U this summer. It's Splatoon, and then I don't think we have anything until September with Mario Maker that's announced.
Well, it's just weird that, like, I understand if they had all these content plans, like, that far out, but, like, just saying, oh, here we are, and... We're showing you this map that's not coming until, like, July sometime. It's like, most people wouldn't be able to show you the maps, you know? But
yeah,
they look done here.
Yeah, and I think that... And I think that it's... I think all this stuff is done. So I don't think it... Like, some people are saying the game isn't complete or... You know, I feel like the game is done. I feel like, again, I feel like it's a strategy that they're employing because... They want. It's the same thing that they kind of did with Mario Kart and Smash Brothers, in that they kept the conversation going. And the Hyrule Warriors, they kept the conversation going with DLC, in that, okay, every other week or so people were talking about it, because it was either we were looking at Mewtwo, we were looking at Mario Kart tracks, we were looking at new characters and stuff like that. So here it's like every 2 weeks or so there's going to be new content. And most importantly, free content. I mean, part of it is because it makes it a complete game. But yes, it's 3 months of like, okay, there's a new map in Splatoon, there's a new mode in Splatoon, there's new gear for your characters in Splatoon. And as much as I hate it, people are going to write about that because they do that, because it's cheap content. It's the same thing they do with Destiny.
Well,
whenever...
and the thing is I would be kind of annoyed if it was paid content, because A, you're splitting the player base with it.
Oh, if it was paid content, I would absolutely hate it.
And the game seems to be a little overpriced as it is anyway.
I don't.
Like, maybe that wouldn't, like, I wouldn't feel that way if, like, it was launching with all of that content. But, like, and the pricing is weird. It's like $60 in the US, but it's only €40, and it's £35 here, which is, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's hard to say if it's overpriced or not. I can understand the concept at launch, but like I said, all the content is free, so you will get that eventually. I think I think it also helps that this has a single-player campaign that does seem to be fairly decent. I think they said there's something like 30 stages in it, which is, that probably won't be more than 5 or 6 hours, but it seems to be something different.
Well, the question is also if that will actually be fun.
I mean, it looks fun from what they've shown. Like I said, it reminds me a lot of like Mario Sunshine. And I like the core mechanics of it so far. As long as they can make a compelling game around that, I think I will. Maybe it's not something I'm going to play 5 or 6. Granted, I don't play many games more than once. But it does seem to be there. The amiibo stuff I can see people having problems with. Whatever. I have my.
Well, because you need to buy both of them, don't you?
You need to buy all three of them.
Yeah, all three.
Well, we have to buy all three of them. You folks can only buy two, and then I think there's a bundle with the Squid Amiibo. I will be honest, I pre-ordered that when they announce them, just because I think they're really great looking characters.
Well, and because you wouldn't be able to get one otherwise.
Well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, again, I my Amiibo stuff is a bit different. I work 10, 15 minutes from the Nintendo World Store. I can probably get it if I
Patient. But like most people wouldn't be able to
people,
get them.
Most people, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they sold out at Outer Faces, so it's always frustrating. But yeah, I would also say that it's Nintendo being Nintendo. I get that these are stress tests in the servers. It's really silly that it's only for 3 hours, and it was three really random times. I'm hoping maybe they do it every weekend, but I'm surprised they didn't make it run for the entire weekend, or like do the three stress tests, and then just say, okay, you can play until Sunday night now.
And there's, like, one of them was at, like, 4 a.m. here, and it's like, Nintendo, who's going to be awake then?
Well, it was a global stress test, so I think if you look at it, like, all the times kind of line up to be, like, around prime time in some country, and then really terrible time all the time. Because, like, last night, I assume that's the one you're talking about, was 11 p.m. for me, which isn't so bad on a Friday night, but it was, like, 8 p.m. in the West Coast, which is, you know, relatively early. The one this morning was 7 a.m. for me, which was 4 a.m. for people in the West Coast, and I imagine that was around noon for you folks. And the one now is around 8 p.m. for you. It's in the afternoon for us, and I assume it's early morning for Japanese players. So it's just, there's really, when you're dealing with multiple times, there's really no good time to do something like this. As we learned with this podcast, it's like there's no ideal time where everybody's going to be awake.
Yeah, I just would have thought that they would have done this regionally instead of globally.
Well, I mean, that's a good thing for them because they do have multiplayer games. I think Wii Sports Club was that, like, it was locked to North American players or European players only. So it's nice that they're like anybody can do this. But and like I said, there is a time that everybody's going to be around. The problem again is that they should have just been like, these are the three big ones, and then we'll just have everybody pay for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah.
Or do it next week and have it everybody pay for the weekend or something like that. Okay, so is there anything else you folks want to talk about before we wrap up for this week?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, not really.
Okay. We will be back. We'll see. Okay, I think we'll be back in 2 weeks. And then we'll work out our E3 plan, because unlike last year, well, one, we should do BioWiki, but also because, like, there's a billion people doing press conferences, so even our typical format wouldn't have worked just because we have, right, Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, Square, EA, Ubisoft, Bethesda, and then a 3-hour PC conference, which is 8 different conferences right now. So, yes, we're probably going to go back to Wiki for a bit just to kind of, you know, get the E3 juices flowing and stuff like that. But I want to thank Martin and Daniel, and this has been Dual Wielding for the week of May 11th, 2015.